So welcome all to this week's Football Fans Podcast. This is the pod that gives real football fans a real voice. We give it to you straight, no fence sitting on the pods, no umming and ahhing. We give it to you with honesty, sometimes brutality, but always with passion.
He's not under enough pressure. I think he's won the lottery at United. He's had the freedom of the transfer market. In all the windows, he's had everything to his heart's desire.
I think we just need to take a moment of silence to really appreciate Giroud and what he has contributed to the Premier League. Giroud, value-wise, is the best forward in the Premier League.
I still believe in the old-fashioned virtues of a midfielder who actually does stuff that I can see and say, yeah, that guy's just won that game. He's dictated that game and he scored some goals. And I just think that this idea that, oh, well, you know, the game's moved on, it's all a bit too subtle for us to understand, it's nonsense.
I've got a really, really strong panel this week on the pod. My name is Jordan, first of all, and a quick reminder that you can follow us on Twitter, FFP_11, and do not forget to subscribe to the pod, Football Fans Podcast, via the iTunes library. Subscribe for free and join in on the fun. Right, so let me introduce my panel for the week. I'm joined this week by our Tottenham regular, Ollie. How you doing, sir?
Very well.
Good. Our Arsenal fan, back for his second appearance on the pod, Simeon. How's it going, bruv?
It's great to be looking down at everybody from the top of the league.
I knew you were saying that. All right. And making his debut on the FFP, trying to get you on for a little while now, we have a Manchester United supporter, Akin. How's it going, sir?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Glad to have you all here this week. I've got a new concoction of guests and panellists. I'm expecting some fire on the pod this week. Let's kick off then with some quick drive-bys. Going to ask each of you a question individually. Start with you, Ollie. Bearing in mind Martinez got away with possibly the worst decision of the season at Manchester City last week at the Etihad, where they drew 0-0, and it's a clear penalty on Sterling conceded by John Stones. Did he have a bit of a cheek having a go at the referees at the end of the Chelsea game, bearing in mind the late goal that they conceded due to a bad refereeing decision?
A bit of a cheek. Mm. He's always had a problem, Bobby M. He is the biggest moaner in the Premier League. You realise that? He's always moaning about something. He's the most one-eyed manager there is. I've noticed this about him for quite some time, that whenever there's a decision that goes against his team, he's always on the referee. He's always moaning about it. I've had a problem with him for quite a long time because everyone sees him as like this nice guy. His teams play great football. But actually, his post-match interviews are really irritating because every single time he's always on the fact that his team got robbed or his team didn't get the decision that they should have got. Mm. And they've been, you know, the result wasn't justified. The thing he needs to worry about is the fact his team aren't getting the results they should do. Again, we saw against Chelsea, they go into injury time 3-2 up and they concede a goal. That's the real headline, not the fact that the referee gave an offside goal, the fact that they were 2-0 up and within 2 minutes they conceded two goals and Chelsea were back on level terms. Every time that there's an issue like that, Martinez finds a way to deflect it by finding something to moan about. Mm. And he should focus more on results and the fact that his team aren't getting them than what's gone on the pitch with the referee.
Akin, we normally with first timers on the pod give them a little time to talk about their club and their season, but because we're going to talk about an element of your club later in the show, we'll combine the two with that later on. So we'll get to United a bit later in the show. Do you think Crystal Palace should roll the dice in this transfer window and try and pick up Christian Benteke? They're struggling to score goals. I don't believe in any of their strikers. I think a striker is all they're really missing. With those wingers, Benteke will probably get moved on this summer anyway. Should they just give Liverpool 13, 14 mil and say, come Benteke, get us European football?
That is a good question. I'm not the biggest fan of Benteke though. I don't really like his style of play. He can get you a few goals, though, so I do see your point. Palace don't have the best strikers in their squad. I can't even think of, who's there? Connor Wickham.
Banford, Wickham, yeah. Shamak.
Banford's gone.
Fraser Campbell.
Who's gone, sorry?
He's gone back to Chelsea, Banford.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Fraser Campbell. I'm not... Their strikers aren't very good, so I don't see how you could go wrong with a little cheeky 12 million for Benteke. 15 at the most because I don't rate him. So yeah, I do see that as a good little cheeky punt. Why not?
On Benteke, do you think he will get moved on this summer, or do you think Klopp will try and make him it work next year? Bearing in mind the 32 million, that's a big write off.
32 million these days. It's yesterday's what, 10 million, which was the day before's 5 million, which was the day before's 3 million. So in terms of the prices, I don't really want to go into how much each player costs with the money that's in the Premier League. But Benteke, he doesn't suit what Klopp is going for. I don't think he fits into that model of play. And I do see, as soon as Klopp gets a replacement, I see Benteke being shipped out, much in the same way as Andy Carroll was when Brendan Rodgers came in. So going back to the initial question about Crystal Palace or any other club really that needs a striker, Benteke could be the kind of guy that will get you 10, what, between now and the end of the season, 8 to 10 league goals. That could be a massive difference between
10th and 7th.
Yes, for example. Yeah.
And he does come alive in the second half of seasons as well. I was looking at his stats at Villa as well. Mr. Simeon, do you think Leicester will look back in May at that Mahrez penalty miss on Saturday and think it was a pivotal moment in their season?
It really depends on how excited and somewhat gassed Leicester fans have become, because the reality is that Leicester have exceeded expectation, and even if they make a last ditch bid for Europe and they don't quite make it and they fall into the Europa League, that is great progress for a club who just about survived from relegation last year. I think they might look back at it, but to be honest with you, I think they've had such a good season that they cannot look back and have any serious regrets.
But bearing in mind, this season is not really a great season. They, at the moment, are well in the mix of still winning the title. They beat Villa on the weekend. That puts pressure on Arsenal and City. Do you think that it was a poor penalty as well? Do you think that they may look back on that game and think that could have kicked us on to first, second, third, but now we've finished 5th, 6th, 7th sort of thing? Or do you think that right about now they're staying up, so anything more is a bonus?
I mean, fair enough. Only literally time will tell whether that is a turning point or not. I do feel though that since the turn of the year, when Vardy has stopped on that miraculous run, that's when we've seen a bit of. I mean, reality set in, but I think you've seen a bit of wind leave their sails. And the truth is that their team has been carried by both organisations at the back to some extent, but most importantly, just the exceptional form of Mahrez and Vardy. And since Vardy's form has dropped off, it's unsurprising that so have Leicester.
Okay. All right, so let's get into it now then, guys. I was watching the football of the weekend, like I'm sure everybody else was, and I noticed that Silva, Eriksen, James Ward-Prowse, Wijnaldum and Fabregas all scored on the weekend. I started thinking to myself, why have I noticed that those players have scored goals? And I started thinking to myself, it's because those guys aren't often goal scorers, really. They don't regularly score a lot of goals, those midfielders. And they got me thinking about goal scoring midfielders / attack-minded midfielders, and kind of who really are the attack-minded midfielders in the Premier League at the moment. And I looked at kind of Silva. I'm a massive fan of David Silva. But I looked at his stats, and his scoring stats at City since he's been there are really, really, really poor. Even I was quite surprised at how poor his actual goal output is. Start with you, Akin. Do you feel that some of the more attack-minded players in the Premier League are underachieving in terms of their goal output? So if you look at some of the top teams, your Eriksen's at Tottenham, your Ozil's at Arsenal, your Matter's at United, even Oscar at Chelsea, do you feel with where they play on the pitch and the ability they possess, they should be scoring more goals than they do? Or is that just not their speciality and they get by with that?
I think they are underachieving in terms of their goal scoring output. I mean, I think there's a number of reasons to explain midfielders scoring less. I think one of those reasons is tied up in Jose Mourinho coming to the English league in 2004. Now, when he came in, this young Portuguese guy, whirlwind and all that type of thing, but he changed the kind of the style of football that was played in English football. And he was the beginning of separating the role of midfielders so definitely. Whereas once upon a time you'd have central midfielders who were box to box, but one was more defensive minded, the other was more attack minded. One was more, you know, specialised in literally just being box to box and so on. He brought in Makalele, who only by the fact that he was at the end of his career didn't have the legs anymore, and called him a defensive midfielder. There were always defensive midfielders around, but the way he defined that and told him not to leave the area.
That's all he was told to do. That was literally just that one job.
The water carrier type thing. Whereas in his peak, he was a lot better than that. He was a box to box guy. So now he's successful with it, and you have a whole raft of other managers following suit and really redefining what a midfielder should do. So now that you get defensive midfielders who are just here to tackle. And for me, you're doing half your job. You're there to tackle, but you're there to join up the midfield and link up the play between defence and attack. And that means getting forward to contribute with goals. So now it's almost like midfielders get away with doing half their job. Okay, you're a midfielder that plays in the number 10 position, so all you need to do is assist and create chances. That man should be scoring his fair few as well.
Goals as well, yeah.
Yeah, or you're the guy that sits in front of the defence just to protect.
Mm.
What are the defenders there for?
Mm.
You know, I get that you need defensive-minded midfielders, of course, but having everyone sit behind the ball and be careful, that's not what football's about.
No.
And it takes the fun out of it, you know. So I think that's part of the reason. Another reason, I'll touch on it quickly, how we can record stats. Before, the most important, well, it still is the most important stat, goals scored. But before, there wasn't so many stats to record and so on. So your goal output was kind of a lot more, it was more magnified. Now we're counting kilometres run, tackles made, interceptions made, assists made. Assists were only officially counted in the Premier League, what, about 10 to 15 years ago?
Mm.
So now where other stats are counted, players are pointing at other things as to why they don't have to score the goals that win you the games.
Yeah.
So it is a bit, I'm only touching on it briefly, but I think those kind of reasons are part of why midfielders are getting away with not doing all of their job.
Well, Ollie, I've got some stats. I've picked out some attack-minded midfielders here. Bear with me here. I'm going to go through the seasons they've been at their clubs and their goal output. So we start with Silva. 4-6, 4-7, 12-2. 35 goals in six seasons. That's an average of six goals per season. This is Premier League, by the way. Ozil, 5-4-3. 12 goals in three seasons. That's an average of four a year. Eriksen, 7-10-4. 21 goals in three seasons. Average of seven per season. Sigurdsson, 7-3-5, 7-3. 25 goals in 5 years. Five a year. Mata, 6-12-0, 6-9-4. 37 goals in six seasons. That's six a season. That's not good enough, surely. The averages of those attack-minded players, that's not acceptable, surely. There should be, their goal output should be more than those figures, surely.
Yeah, I would probably say they should be. But then there are still players who are scoring goals, and maybe we've lost a couple of the big goal scorers that we had in previous years. I mean, Gerrard's gone away now, hasn't he? Lampard's left.
Pause you there, Ollie. Sorry, I checked those guys as well because I thought, am I just getting a bit like harsh? And I look back to some of the guys like the Fabregas at Arsenal that were getting good midfield numbers, your Gerrards. Those guys were getting like average, and I checked, about 10, 11 as well. Better than the current crop of attack-minded midfielders.
So what? Lampard
was the only one that was like consistently getting 15 on a bad season.
Hmm.
He was the only one. So even back then, they were getting better than this current crop. But we think that Gerrard was getting, you know, easily 15 goals a season, but he actually wasn't in the Prem.
But I still think that 10 a season is decent for a midfielder. I think if you're getting 10 goals a season, you've got to look that you're expecting your forward to weigh in with at least, you know, a top forward to weigh in with, you know, 20 or somewhere around there. And then, you know, wingers and all the rest of it. So I think for someone in Gerrard's position as well, I mean, I know he had that period under Benitez when he was playing just behind Torres. 10, yeah. But essentially, we always saw him as more of a deep-lying midfielder. So I don't think that's bad. A bad return for a midfielder to get 10 league goals in a season.
Mm.
But yeah, I think that Lampard and Gerrard are two big players that we've lost. And then we look at people like Eriksen, who I think he's having a poor season by his standards in front of goal. He's not really doing it from the set pieces. He's only scored. He scored a couple at the weekend, but I'd say both of them were had an element of luck to him. To be honest with you, I mean, Catamol. I don't know why he didn't. How he didn't manage to clear that off the line, I don't know. And then the other guy they just signed from Bayern, flicking a leg out and just saying, "Oh well, you know, I won't bother actually getting a challenge, and I'll just flick a leg out." But yeah, I think Eriksen should be doing a lot better in terms of goal scoring. Silva's record is poor, I have to say, and I think there is a lot of responsibility left to Aguero to get Manchester City's goals. But then, having said that, you know, Toure does score a few goals for them.
I've got Toure here. So yeah. I've just read out to. I've got 6-6-6, 20-10-5, 53 goals in six seasons. That's an average of 9 per season. So it's better than the rest.
Which I think is
but
better.
It's not great.
Yeah. It's not great. But then, having said that, you look, think of the last few, well, not the last few games, but over Christmas, you know, against Arsenal, the goal he scored at the Emirates was fantastic. Then he scored that goal at Watford as well. So yeah, he does weigh in with his goals, and I think he does weigh in with important goals as well. But yeah, I think that he does a job in terms of scoring goals from midfield. Mm-hmm. I think there are you know, players doing it, but I just think the role of the midfield has changed to such a degree. And you know, as Akin was saying, I think there's a real kind of difference in the way that what midfielders are expected to do now. You know, they're all expected to kind of play,
do everything,
you know. Well, they've all got very defined roles now, whereas before it was just about kind of, you know, it would be more kind of organic. You would kind of move forward, and whoever was forward, the other guy would stay back and all the rest of it. But now you've got a situation where one player is just staying back and then the other player is going forward.
Well,
and
I don't know. I might take a counter position. I'd say now it seems like post Barcelona, it seems like the model of football now requires far more flexibility. And so the model, the move into kind of a 4-3-3, which is not really a 4-3-3, means that attacking midfielders or number 10s who are driving to the box, their position's kind of somewhat changed. And you're asking people to do things which are slightly bit more different. So if you even take Ozil's role, who plays like a number 10, he's more like a deep-lying playmaker who moves around the pitch, creating space. And then you have players like maybe Ramsey, who has a particular passion to get into the box, who's asked to be disciplined in particular positions. And so I think players are asked to be far more versatile and to have almost a complete sense of fluidity. And I think this is what has prevented the kind of archetypal, my role as a midfielder is to get into the box and score goals. And I think that if anything, players now are having to show more variety. And I think that's why we're probably seeing less, you know, profound goal scoring midfielders.
You mentioned Ozil there. I mean, I think Akin is differs to me on this view, but I'm of the view that a price and what you pay for a midfielder, attacking midfielders, you should get a certain amount of goals returned from those players. I feel that if you're costing 30, 40, 50, in Di Maria's case, 60 million, I'm expecting some goals. But now, and I tell you why, I'll let you come in there. Ronaldo and Messi are putting silly numbers on the board, 50 goals a season, they're putting silly numbers. I'm not expecting Di Maria, your Matic, your Özil to be getting 50 goals a season. But if your club is paying 30, 40, 50, 60 million for an attacking midfielder, you got to give me surely 15, 20 goals a season, no?
Well, typically, the reason why attacking players are more valuable is because the most precious commodity in football is goals. Goals win games win titles, that create silverware. But then you have to look at other levels of contribution now. And maybe we should be asking questions like, does a world-class keeper like Peter Cech, who could win you the season, maybe he's actually worth a lot of money? When Juventus played, you know, £32 million for Buffon way back when, which would have been crazy money in today's market, that would have been money well spent. And so maybe we need to reassess what value is, because if Ozil has 16 assists this year, and many of those goals were literally made from scratch, they were like world-class balls in games when it was very tight, what value does that have? Now, I think conventionally, we should ask, well, goals are the golden egg. So where is your goal output? But I think we should get to a stage now where we're mature enough to recognize value. Because if Arsenal do win the title this year, the key signing probably will be Cech, and that's priceless, which makes £10 million an absolute snip.
I agree with that, but if you're paying these big sums, I mean, Gareth Bale went to Madrid for 80 million, which we all agree probably was inflated price for him. But that was the back of 2 seasons of scoring 20 plus goals. So you could argue that he almost justified a big fee to go to Madrid. Ozil cost 42 million. He's got 2 goals this season, in the Prem.
We know that he's contributed to goals, and it's not even as if he just contributed in a very mundane manner. In some ways, his ball made those goals, and his vision made those goals. In some cases,
he's got a great assist record, right? But I still believe in the old-fashioned virtues of a midfielder who actually does stuff that I can see and say, that guy's just won that game. He's dictated that game, and he scored some goals.
I just think that
this idea that the game's moved on, it's all a bit too subtle for us to understand. It's nonsense. I just don't buy it. The game hasn't changed that much. The game is simple. And I look at and people who watch football, we all watch football, we've all watched it for years. And I remember when Man United were winning stuff, you looked at Keane and Scholes and you could see what they were doing. You looked at Keane and thought, he's bossing it there. He is bossing this game. But you might not score goals, but the bottom line is I knew that Keane went on the pitch and he went out to dominate teams, dominate the opposition, and Vieira was the same when he's at his very best at Arsenal. I don't buy this kind of Ozil, what a wonderful player he is. He's just flicked on a pass for Ramsey to score and all the rest of it. I would say 42 million, do some more than that.
This season, more than ever, I've watched football and said Ozil has made a huge difference in some games where it was so marginal who would win an outstanding moment.
Which games were they? Yeah.
So I think the way that he bossed against United was class, making space.
United were awful.
I think he committed suicide that day.
There have been a number of games this season, particularly at the Emirates, where it was very close.
Did he play against Southampton?
Yeah. Yeah. Particularly, there are many games this season where
we won 1-0. Did he play in that game?
I don't know. I mean, world class players. World class players have lost games. I agree with that.
But the thing is, I would like to think that a player who's that good, who was that amazing, who had kind of dictated so many games, I would say that's the game I want to see you stand up and do something, because the rest of the team are playing absolutely dreadfully. I would like to see him kind of pick the team up, but then that's not his game, is it? His game is more when Arsenal are playing and it's all working well, then he works well as well.
I can come in 1 second.
I want to weigh in. I think a couple of things were mentioned in terms of Ozil's price and what he should be returning.
I used him as an example, but Di Maria is arguably a better example because he was 20 million more and he wasn't a goal scorer.
He might have been if he was managed differently.
Even at Madrid, his record was really good for assists, but he didn't score a lot of goals at Real Madrid.
But then in terms of going back to what your money should return, I don't think we can... When it comes to money in the Premier League specifically, I don't think we can look at the figures anymore because it's all relative to how much they can afford. In terms of your acquisitions, if you are solving a problem of your squad and it costs 40 million to solve that problem, then by all means, if you've got that 40 million...
Even if he's not worth 40 million.
But he is, because he solves that problem.
But you can find someone to solve that problem for half the price. What problem is he solving, though?
But then I don't think Ozil... I think Arsenal got loads of players like Ozil, to be honest. Let me come to the point.
I don't think the Ozil signing was particularly needed by Arsenal.
No, I agree.
Having said that, in terms of the price for what he should return, I think they're two different things. If he solves the problem, if he's what he needs, and he happens to cost 42.5 million, if you can afford it, pay it. If he's going to take you to the title, then it's worth it. If he solves that problem, it's worth it. But then, is he scoring enough goals?
No.
I don't think he is. And I agree completely with you, Ollie, in terms of football is a simple game. Football is a simple game. And sometimes it is, you can just see it. This player has dominated the game. He has dictated play. I think you are being a bit harsh on Ozil. Ozil has dictated a couple games this season.
No, I agree. I agree with that.
He has dictated a couple games this season.
Are we getting enough goals from the more talented attacking mids in this Premier League?
Can I go back to Jordan, your point about the goals? Again, I agree with Ollie. 10 goals a season, 10 league goals a season, even 9 to 10 league goals a season is a massive difference.
Very good.
To 6 or 5 league goals a season.
Oh, no, I agree with that. But is it still good enough?
9 to 10 is definitely good enough. That's a good return.
For a midfielder, it is. Yeah.
In the league.
So you think if Silva can get 10 goals a season, Matt can get 10 goals a season, you take that. That's acceptable.
You've scored a quarter in a quarter of the games. You know, 38 game season, you've scored 10 goals. You've scored 1 in 4, roughly. And that's from all the games you could have played. That's a good return. Mm-hmm. 5?
It's true.
Not so much.
Yeah.
That's not enough.
Okay.
I mean, when you're dealing with, you know, the likes of Aaron Lennon when he was playing at Spurs and he's scoring like 2 goals, that's a problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a problem where I'm looking at him thinking, why have you not developed? I don't understand it. You were in the team before Gareth Bale. Gareth Bale's come along, yeah? He's buoyed you off. He's come into the team, right? And at first, everyone was saying, oh, he's a jinx. He can't get a game. He can't. And every time he plays... Spurs lose. Then he comes into the team and starts winning us games and scoring goals and then going to Real Madrid. And like you were saying, he's scoring 20 goals 2 seasons running, and Aaron Lennon is scoring 2 goals. And you're like, how do you not look at that and think, boy, I've gone wrong there somewhere. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I think there are too many players. I agree with what you're saying, Jordan, to a certain extent, that there are too many players who rest on their laurels and think, well, my job is just to like get balls in or do an Ozil. Oh yeah, I'll just make some assists.
This goes
your
to my
job,
final
your
point.
Your job is also to score goals.
Yep,
and I think that some of these players, like an Aaron Lennon, like, you know, and there are plenty of players out there, and it's not just about
so
Ozil.
Are you
plenty of players out there who do not score enough goals.
So are you encouraging midfielders who when they are presented with an opportunity to score, choose to pass it to a player in a better position.
Hold that thought. This is my last question now. Is the problem now there's a shift in the last 5-6 years that the glory now is in making the assist rather than the glory of scoring the goal?
I certainly think that
attacking mids would rather win 3-1, get 2 assists and not score than get a tap in and win 1-0.
I think that the game's become almost... It's become about the artistry, and I think that the spiritual impression that Barcelona have had and their dominance has had on footballers who love the game... It's been one there. It's a game of creativity, and where midfielders now do get a sense of glory from passing, and you'll see it very often when presented with a chance to score. Whereas the striker might be more inclined to take it and be more greedy, midfielders actually enjoy the pass and they enjoy the free ball rather than taking the pot shot a lot of the times.
There have always been midfielders that have gained glory in creating chances. That's the nature of football.
As many as the current crop of attacking mids?
Not as many, and I do think Simeon. He's correct in terms of the impression that Barcelona generation has made. I think it's...
Build-up play is better than the actual finish.
It's created a generation of snobs, football snobs. That's what I think it is, that think football is... It is about the artistry. I do agree, but it's just the fashion. Yeah, and it will die out soon.
It will die out soon. The thing is, I agree to what you're saying to a point, but what I would say as well is the problem is that we live in a stats-driven world. So everything is about stats now, isn't it? What are your stats? How many goals do you set up? You know,
Important stat is always how many goals have been scored, how many wins... How many trophies and so on and so forth.
I agree.
And those will always be the most important stats.
But I do think there's midfielders who sit back and think, I'm all right because I've made X amount of goals.
What's the fashionable stat at the moment? That will always change. At the moment, it's assist. Mm. Another time, it might be kilometres run. Another time, it might be crosses. It depends the direction of
the flavor
football.
Of the month. Yeah.
And right. I think we're just in that time.
Okay. All right, let's move on now.
Although I do think... Your analysis has been focused a lot on top 4 teams in terms of attacking midfielders. But actually, if you look at sides like West Ham with Payet or Stoke, players like Arnautovic and obviously Leicester and Mahrez, I thought that if you look beneath the top 5, the rise of attacking midfielders contributing to those teams is probably why this league is so competitive. Because there are actually more goal scorers at teams outside the top 5. Than there are probably in teams who are in the top 5.
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's move on now. Let's start with you, Ms. Juan Simeon. Pound for pound, Aguero aside, is Giroud the best centre forward in the Premier League?
This is why I'm here, to be honest.
So first of all, answer the question. First of all, answer the question and then explain your answer.
This is why I'm here. I think we just need to take a moment of silence to really appreciate Giroud and what he has contributed
that a yes or a no?
To the Premier League.
Wow.
Giroud,
are we talking about the same
Giroud,
player?
Giroud, value-wise, wow, is the best forward in the Premier League. And I tell you what, he is so underrated. I'd almost make the hyperbole statement to say that he's the most underrated forward in Premier League history.
Come on. I was with you before, we've got to back that up now.
I mean, there was an interesting blog by Alan Shearer, who is an icon in terms of being a goal scorer in the Premier League. And he says that, you know, Giroud is not world class. He's never scored more than 20 goals a season. But then at the same time, he probably would buy into the belief that Rooney is world class, even though over the past four seasons, Giroud has scored more goals than Wayne Rooney. And also, if you
would you say Giroud is world class then?
I don't believe Giroud is world class.
Okay.
I think, and the reason why Giroud is not world class is because players like Ronaldo and Messi, I mean, they've completely blown up what it means to even be world class now. To be honest,
they're not centre forwards,
and
even without them.
But hang on, if they didn't exist,
is Giroud world class?
What I think Giroud is, I think he's a competent, top class European forward, and I think that he's done it in the games against his rivals. He's done it against United, done it against City, done it against Spurs, and I think that actually, if you look at his goals per game ratio or games per minute ratio, certainly going into the last game, it was one of the I think it was the leading record.
I think it was as well, yeah. So let me just check. In my question, I said Aguero aside, yeah, is he the best pound for pound? Are you saying that he is the best pound for pound centre forward in the league?
I mean, well, here's the thing, isn't it? Aguero is the most talented forward in the league. He's clinical, he's got everything that you want. Mm. He's an ideal forward, but he's injury prone. He doesn't give you the games that Giroud will. But Giroud can score a diversity of goals outside the box, inside the box. He can finish, and more importantly than that, he does have really good movement. And a lot of the time when you're looking at a forward, people think it's just about being able to finish, but it's not. It's about movement, which is why someone like Podolski, who can finish, just never could make it. And I think that Giroud, actually, I think he's really underappreciated. And I've watched him, you know, consistently throughout the last few years. And, you know, he, having been an Arsenal fan who's grown up under Bergkamp and grown up under Henri and some Van Persie's, I mean, these guys are real geniuses. But actually, in this game right now, there is a deficit of top-class forwards, which is why United are struggling to replace their forward line, which is why Chelsea are struggling now, because actually in the market right now there isn't a lot of value when it comes to upper tier strikers. But
so,
I think that Giroud,
so are
right
you
now,
saying that Giroud is a top class striker in comparison to what's out there?
Well, definitely in comparison to what's out there, almost certainly. So when Arsenal fans say we need to play Giroud, I say okay, who? Because actually, in terms of what's available in the market, he's better than what's available in the market.
Akin, you've been laughing for the last 2.5 minutes.
Oh, mate.
First of all, can you answer the question? Pound for pound, Aguero aside, is he the best centre forward in the Premier League?
What do you mean pound for pound? In terms of
value for money. For what he does, is he the best centre forward in the league?
Value for money is tough for me. But Giroud, he just doesn't do it for me at all.
Is it yes or no, first of all? Then I'll let you explain your answer.
It's a no.
Right, so then tell me who is better value for money in the Premier League than
I would say
Giroud.
Right now?
No, not right now, not on form, not who's injured.
What, in terms of
I mean
what?
Just strikers. Look at all the strikers that are out there in the Premier League. Who would you take in your team, apart from Aguero?
I'll tell you what, this is going to be controversial. I would even take Diego Costa over
Madness.
Giroud. I will take Martial over Giroud. I will take Harry Kane, Romelu Lukaku. I will take them all over Olivier Giroud. Giroud doesn't do it for me. He has played well this season and his goal scoring record is quite good. I'll give you that. But then more on the point of who's he scored against. You said he's done it against United. All I remember him doing against United was score a consolation goal in a game where we...
City.
I can't remember the important goals that
Bayern.
Giroud has scored. Bayern? What?
Bayern.
When? In the group, in a game Bayern didn't really show up for because they knew that the group was sewn up.
He scored
more
against
or less.
Bayern consistently. I mean, even last season he scored against
when
Bayern.
When you were knocked out, the goals don't mean anything if you lose and get kicked out of the tournament.
When we won 2-0, he scored.
This season,
he scored a big hat trick in against Olympiakos. I'm not answering the question. I don't think his goals are important enough.
His goals aren't important enough.
Winning goal against City.
Okay, thank you. He might have got the odd important goal. But in general, his goals aren't important enough. He's not a big game player for me.
Mm.
He scores goals. To me, he typifies Arsenal over the last 10 years, 10, 12 years. Flat track bully. Likes to do up his hair, look pretty and stuff. And doesn't want to do it when it really counts. His goal scoring record is quite good. You might name a couple teams that he scored against. But again, against my club, United, he scored consolation goals.
Ollie, Harry Kane or Wayne Rooney? Wayne Rooney. Harry Kane or Olivier Giroud?
Harry Kane.
And why is that?
I think he's a better forward and I think he's got more to his game. I think he brings players into the game. He can set other people up to score goals and he can score goals himself. And I just think he's a better player. I mean, to be honest with you, Jordan, I can't believe we're even having this conversation because I just think it's enough. This is another one of your Arsenal questions, isn't it?
I've not talked Arsenal the whole season so far.
Yeah, but I just don't get it. I just look at it and I think, well...
I'm asking the question because statistically, Aguero aside, he's up there. He's scoring the goals in the big games, which he was accused of last season. Mm. He scored a variety of goals. He's not just tapping in a header. He's scored a variety of goals. I'm asking the question simply because I think in the last 18 months, it's a question worth asking.
I'm not saying that he is. I'm asking the question. In the last 18 months...
Yeah. He tends to do it when it doesn't count. His movement isn't good.
Let me just flick back earlier in the season, right? He wasn't, to Arsenal fans, he wasn't even the best striker at Arsenal, let alone the best striker in the Premier League. You know, Arsenal fans were complaining about him and saying he wasn't good enough, and everyone was saying we got to give Theo a go, we got to play Theo through the middle because Giroud's just not good enough for Arsenal. He's not the right player. And even listening to what Simeon said, I've never heard a more reductive claim about a player that he was the right player. He's just said he's not world class, he's not top class, but who else is out there? That isn't to me.
I said he's top class, but I said he's top class. That isn't to me the sound of someone who thinks this player.
I mean, you know, make some positive statements out there. If he's not world class, why are we talking about him? Aguero, we would say is definitely world class, right? Yeah. So I'm looking at him thinking,
in terms of strikers
out there this season, right? I'm looking at Vardy who went on that run.
He might have fallen away a bit now,
but I think he's carrying an injury. But I look at what Vardy's done this season. He's the one everyone's talking about. I look what Kane's done, not just last season, but he's carried on doing it this season, right? Giroud is playing in a team where you, as I said earlier, you create chances at Arsenal. You must create about 5 or 6 chances a game. He should be scoring goals in that team. Everyone turns around and says, as I said to you before, every pundit that you ever hear talking about Arsenal says, I'd love to play in that team because they create so many chances. Shearer said, I'd love to play in that team. You said a moment ago, Simeon, Shearer's turned around and said, he's not a top class striker. He doesn't score over 20 goals. I'd say that if Shearer, I don't rate everything Shearer says, but I'd say that he's right on this one. I definitely think that you look at him and you think, well, you know, Henri earlier this season, if I'm not mistaken, was saying Giroud isn't good enough for Arsenal.
He was saying that, but has he not responded to the criticism that even Arsenal fans, as you said, were very hard on Giroud in the last 6 months? Would you not say he's made improvements?
What's changed? I don't understand what's changed. I just look in and think, well, as I said to you before, if you're a striker worth your salt, right, and you're playing in Arsenal's team, you should be scoring goals. You should be doing well. Arsenal create a lot of chances. You know, newsflash, have we missed something? You know, he's not a top-class striker. He's not, and you know, I forgot, Lukaku as well has been tearing it up for Everton. He's been scoring goals week in, week out. So his record against the big teams isn't great.
He's having a good season this season.
Did he not score against Man City last week?
It was 0-0, wasn't it?
No, I mean in the League Cup. In the semi-final, he scored against Man City, right?
Okay, yeah, that's one.
My understanding. Well, firstly, this is the difference. The difference is that Giroud is still carrying a stigma where people believe he's a poor player. He's not. So I didn't say he's a poor player.
The question is he the best pound for pound player in the Premier League, barring Aguero? I'd say no. I'd say that there's plenty of other players who are better than him.
The reason why I say yes is because, one, I think he's carrying a stigma, which is why people can say he doesn't do it for me, even though his record is as good as anybody else at the moment.
What stigma is that? That he's not good enough?
Effectively, yes. Now,
why do you think people are saying that?
Because
that stigma comes from the performances on the pitch,
because,
right?
Because firstly,
the point he's making is that stigma came from 2.5 years ago when he was average.
Not
that
long
ago.
No, it wasn't 2.5 years. It was the start of this season.
No, it wasn't.
People
it wasn't,
were saying
it's
no.
It was last season.
I just asked you the question, right? And Jordan backed it up. This season, because if I remember rightly, this is Henri's first season as a pundit, right? First full season as a pundit. This very season, Henri was standing on Monday Night Football.
And it wasn't out of context.
And he was saying,
said, if he's the striker, Arsenal can't win the league.
And yet, it wasn't out of context. Thank you very much.
But what I meant was that Henri wasn't the first player to criticise Giroud.
But that's not
the criticism
point.
Came well before Henri. He was just the most high-profile player to criticise
him. The point I'm making is that you were saying in the last 18 months, and you're making out like there's been something that we've all missed something here. The fact is, only this season, Arsenal fans and Thierry Henry were saying, if he's our striker, we can't win the title. And now we're halfway through the season, and it's all changed. Giroud's now, is he the best pound for pound striker in the Premier League? No, he's not.
Here's the thing. You're making it sound like everybody's having this discussion when they're not. And this is why I feel that he's undervalued. When actually, if you look at his record, not even just this season, but actually last season, he's got a record better than 2-1. And a very high goal ratio. And also, more importantly, this season, he's done it against most of his rivals. I believe he scored against Liverpool, scored against United, scored against Leicester, scored against City. And I feel that actually this is one of the criticisms of him, that he has not turned up in big games. Turned up in the Champions League, in the Champions League group stages when we were dead and buried, to fire
exactly.
us through.
No pressure.
So, there was pressure.
Why were you in that position in the first place?
And I feel that Giroud had delivered at a higher level because Kane has not played in the Champions League. So I mean that the truth is actually, if you look at what he's done, I think that you have to say pound for pound, value wise, he's been a great buy. And when Arsenal fans routinely say we cannot win the league with Giroud, we need another forward, I say, well, in the market right now, the truth is, this is one of the best forwards currently in the market.
So I can on that point, if Arsenal need an upgrade on Giroud, who would you suggest Arsenal can and should go and get in the summer?
Well, one of the players I already mentioned. That's just domestically. Lukaku, Harry Kane.
Is that an upgrade on Giroud? Or is
for
that on
me,
a, are they on a par?
No way.
For me, he's an upgrade on the boy with the hair, Giroud. he's an upgrade on him. Giroud's in good form. He's in good form. But I think Ollie's made the point that every ex-player that's a forward, you don't even need to be a forward. For the last 5, 6, 7 years, Arsenal have been one of the top teams for creating chances. For the last few years, they've had Giroud to finish those chances, and that's why they've not really got return for their money, shall we say, because he's just not of the level to take them to win the league, to win the Champions League.
Which is my final question. What would he need to do then to prove that he is a top-class striker?
Simeon has
If you're
made,
not having him now, what would
Simeon
make you have
has
him?
Made fair points in that he's added to what he's always done. He's been a flat-track bully and scored the odd goal against teams that don't really matter, racking up the goals to make it look like he's a good striker. This year, he might have done it in more important games. He needs to replicate that throughout the whole of the season, taking Arsenal to the league title. He needs to do it next season as well before he can be taken seriously.
It'd be very interesting to see if he starts for France in the European Championships. And it'd be interesting to see.
Is that
if
the standard bearer for you? If he does well this summer?
No. The standard bearer for me is a combination of everything that Akin was saying, which is go and do it regularly, and do it in the big games that matter.
Let's move on now to a final topic, guys. Start with you, Ollie, on this one. Everybody knows about the whole incident between Neil Custis and Louis van Gaal last week.
I haven't seen it.
The incident between, for those that haven't seen it, press conference. Was it ahead of the Liverpool game or was it the post after Newcastle?
It was ahead of the Liverpool game.
Pre-press conference for the Liverpool match.
Friday presser.
they wanted to discuss Wayne Rooney. LVG didn't. He concluded his press conference, walked out. There was a murmuring from one of the journos. Neil Custis was giggling with the journalists. Lou Van Gaal hears the giggling and singles out Neil Custis and says, yeah, people like you, fat man. Is LVG a bit of a hypocrite, or do you think he's just a man that was just basically fighting fire with fire?
Well, it's bad form to say something like that in a public forum, isn't it? It's not good. I think he needs to show a bit more class. But then, having said that, the former manager didn't have any problem with digging out the journalists there and banning them. So, you know, it's kind of, that's the way it goes. But I just
David Moyes.
But yeah, I don't think it's one of those things that should be made a big thing should be made of it. To be honest with you, I think that
I think it's a big deal.
Has anyone been hurt by it, really? Custis has got a bit of publicity out of it. He's done quite a lot.
Rinsed it this week.
He's absolutely rinsed it. He's got a lot of gigs off the back of it, isn't it? You know that Sunday Supplement is like, you've got to come in this week. You've got to talk about
that. He wasn't booked, was he, for Sunday?
He wasn't booked. But you know that they just thought, we got to get him in now. But, you know, he's got a lot out of it. It's done his career no harm.
The wider problem is it acceptable that he got personal? Because that's what it was.
No,
it was personal.
It's not right. But then, having said that, let's be honest, it must be incredibly difficult to keep your cool when you're dealing with these guys and they're basically telling you how to do your job, then they're telling you you're going to lose your job, and you know, and they're saying that your team plays rubbish football and all the rest of it, and he's been managing for how long in the game? Yeah, you know, I know Van Gaal's not really doing it at the moment, but it must be. I mean, I never understand how Wenger manages to keep his cool as much as he does, and when he loses it, I'm like, I don't know how he didn't do it like before, because the kind of questions he gets asked sometimes are just not right. It's not right.
They're never personal, though. They might say he's a rubbish manager.
They are sometimes. Sometimes they get personal with him, yeah. I mean, you know, I just think that, well, the press get personal with him, with Wenger. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, did the press get personal with Van Gaal?
That's what I'm saying. So does it justify Van Gaal getting personal with the media?
I don't think so. I think you've got to rise above it. But I still think that, you know, sometimes...
It's a limit and you...
Sometimes I think you've got to give as well. You know, if you want to give it, you've got to be able to take it. But I don't think calling someone fat man is right, I have to say. I think you've got to be a bit smarter than that. But I do think that if the media guys are going to give it out as much as they do, and they do give it out, let's be honest.
But again, then I think they say he's a rubbish manager. They say he's poor, tactically poor. They say that he's an old, you know, he's a has-been. He was poor in that game. That's a professional criticism. He was personal. They never say to him, "Oh, Louis van Gaal, you're a bit ugly." Or Louis van Gaal, yeah,
no,
maybe
don't
if you
say
know.
That. And I agree. And that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's right for him to be personal, but I do think that, you know, it takes the patience of a saint to actually be someone who holds your tongue and you don't lose it sometimes. He's lost it. Mm. He's lost it there. He's not used to what he's getting. Let's be honest. Wherever he's gone, he's probably got a lot of, you know, people revere him, don't they? And I know he had a bad time in Spain for a bit, but people give him a lot of respect. He's probably not getting the respect he thinks he deserves. Mm. And he's not used to it. He's not used to being at this level where people are looking at him and thinking, you don't know what you're doing, do you? It's not what he expects, you know. And not only that, but in the last couple of weeks since Mourinho got sacked as well, there were people talking about him, you know, replacing Van Gaal, and that's going to burn him because he's thinking that he was my boy at Barcelona. I can't have that, you know what I mean? These things are going to burn him, man.
Akin, if he replaced the fat man personal slur with something, say, you know, but if it was a female journalist and he said, yeah, you too, woman, or if he said, yeah, you too, with the one arm, would it have been a bigger deal?
You can't control if you're a woman. Well, you can, I guess, now. But, you know, you kind of get my point. Or whether you've got one arm, you know, but you can't control being fat. So I do think there's a difference in those examples that you gave, but I do take your point. I don't think he was right for getting personal. Having said that, journalists get personal a lot. I mean, we talk about professional criticism, but is it professional or is it a personal criticism to say you're not good enough to do your job, and to break it down and say things like, you're sitting on the bench looking clueless. Being clueless is not professional. And I've seen him be called clueless on many occasions. I've seen disparaging comments or
quotations.
Well,
clueless is a criticism that you personally don't know what you're doing.
But being clueless is, you know, to be called clueless alone, that is, you know, for me, that's personal. To be, I've seen quotes about his quiff, his hairdo and things like that. That's personal. So, and also he asked for the apology. I don't know if you got that apology. So there you go. So
do, no, sorry, do, I mean from...
Before Christmas, Van Gaal asked for the apology.
Oh, yeah.
Did he get the apology from the journalists? For he didn't get the apology.
Well,
so
the journalists might have been... To be fair, he might have thought that he was within his rights. He was told by good sources that Lou Van Gaal today was going to get
Van
sacked.
Gaal,
he's allowed to print
fought
that.
Within his right. He was right for calling out the fact that Custis is overweight.
Criticism that the journalist made of Van Gaal's position at the job was professional.
And Van Gaal
talking about how fat you are is not anybody.
I don't think he was right for doing it, but I like the fact that he did it. I don't like him as my Man United manager. He doesn't do it for me. But
so
I do
tell
like,
me why. So just give me a little overview on Van Gaal.
I think his style of football is dated. I think it's 20 years in the past. I think his man management is very poor. Very, very poor. And I think, in a weird way, I think he's swayed by the general consensus. I think he kind of gets swayed by public criticism and all that stuff. He has changed his... To argue with what Jamie Carragher was saying on Super Sunday, he has made a conscious change of his style of play over the last 3-4 games. United have definitely been more attacking, and that has been due to criticism that he's received from the public. If you're a strong manager and you believe in what you're doing and you believe what you're doing is right, fair enough, you do have to be adaptable, but you stick to your guns and you adapt maybe on the periphery and adapt over time. He has changed and gone away from what he finds natural and will revert to type eventually if it doesn't go the way he plans it to go. So a combination of these things, I think he misuses players as well.
Can I just ask you, Greg, do you think that some of that change has come from
internal.
Within?
I think,
do you think
I
that
think
Giggs
possibly.
Has said to him,
no,
listen,
no, no, no,
man,
I don't think it's come from Giggs. I don't think Giggs has that kind of sway over Van Gaal or that power. I think it might have come from above. I think some of it has come internally.
I just meant more in that thing with, you know, with all that business with Scholes keep digging him out and saying, you know, the football's rubbish, I wouldn't want to play in this team.
I don't think it's so much that. I think it's the general consensus. And I do think the Adidas chief executive saying something might have kind of influenced...
It's nice to few the shareholders.
At United, who may have said something to Van Gaal, look, we have to play a bit more positively here because, you know... All these lack of, not even goals, shots on target, for heaven's sake. Not even shots on target, shots. You know, it's terrible. But back to the point about the journalist, I like the fact that he showed some fight. I like my manager to be ready to go to war when there's war to be had. As you mentioned, Alex Ferguson was ready to go to war. He never made... If he did go too far, he always did apologise, to be fair to him. Van Gaal didn't on this occasion. But Alex Ferguson was ready to go to war. Jose Mourinho is ready to go to war. Pep Guardiola was ready to go to war. Van Gaal, I like the fact that he was ready and he did it. I don't think he was right. Having said that, the journalists can't cry like what Ollie said, they give plenty. They've given plenty. They've given him plenty. Fair enough, Van Gaal wasn't right, but take it on the chin, man.
Simeon, we have a regular Chelsea fan, G, on our pod. And he's a very big Mourinho fan. And I can hear G in the back of my head now saying, if that was Jose said that, if Jose said that, it would be front page, not back page. Do you feel that maybe it's gone under the radar a little bit? And if that was Jose Mourinho, it would have literally been a different, it wouldn't have been just a laugh. And no, I'll take it, fat man.
I think that Jose's record, though, is really problematic. Because not only does he lash out against journalists, who I feel... should bear their cross because journalists and commentators, more importantly, are very cavalier in the way that they speak about professionals, and they are quite personal at times, and they will talk about people's weight, they will make jibes about their relationships, and so I think that, you know, if you're going to give it, you should take it. But with Jose, he was really unpleasant about his own colleagues. Some of the things he said about Ranieri, you know, he can't speak English, you know, who is he? Wenger, he called a stalker, Voyeur. I mean, the disrespect that he showed to people who are peers, I think is why he's so heavily criticized. Even if you look at his treatment of the doctor, Eva Canero, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't treat fellow peers the way that Jose did, and that's why I think that actually, I don't think that he is treated badly. I think that people know what he's about. He's a wind up. He's a deflector. And actually, he has no respect.
Isn't there a bit of irony as well? It's one of the main criticism I'm hearing from United as to why they don't want to bring in Mourinho as their next manager is because of the reputation of the club, and he might tarnish that.
I mean,
Louis van Gaal kind of do that by getting personal with a journalist?
I mean, there are incidents, and then there is a catalogue and a portfolio of throwing shade.
And a character trait.
And a character. And I think that Mourinho has a particular character. And, you know, I'm a United fan, so I'll jibe at clubs. But, you know, United are a classy club. I mean, you can't take that away from them. They've got a history. They've got a culture. A lot of that culture over the past 30 years, especially under Sir Alex Ferguson and having the club, the way it's set up, with people like Bobby Charlton involved. I mean, they have a proper way of doing things. And they like to carry themselves in that manner. And although I do feel it's very likely that Mourinho probably will take over because a club like United does need to win, and he does seem to guarantee winning wherever he's gone, I can understand their reservation, because actually he has shown a lack of respect to his peers, and that's not the United way.
I'll give you the final word on this one, Aki. Is this the incident just a wider problem of maybe that aside? This is a man under pressure, and as Ollie said, he's popped. And all that, we can talk about whether, you know, who's personal, whether that's allowed or not, take it, whatever. But is the wider the question, is he starting to lose the plot now? Is he was that a reaction of someone that's under the heat, and he just he reacted in a bad way, which is bad for the next 6 months, potentially for you guys? Because if he's losing it now, what does that say for the next 10, 15, 20 games?
I think we're always in trouble for the next 15, 20 games, whether he's losing it or not. Because for me, he's not good enough to manage Man United the way he is now. In terms of whether he's under pressure, he's not under enough pressure. I think he's won the lottery at United. He's had the freedom of the transfer market in all the windows. He's had everything to his heart's desire. I want this 19-year-old kid for £36 million that nobody has heard of. The kid turns out to be a special player with special potential, but how many managers are going to get that backing from their board? He has had everything to his heart's desire. I want my pre-season set up in this way. I want cameras over the training pitch in that way. I want floodlights over here. I want this, I want that. We're going to change the type of tables we have in the dining room. We're going to change the type of food. We're going to change meal times. He has had the freedom of a super club, and he has not delivered. And I think he's seeing that the writing is on the wall. I think he will be gone at the end of the season. But I don't think he's been put under enough pressure. For me, he should have been sacked a while ago. It's not even to do with results. It's to do with style of play. It's to do with the wider issues that I've already mentioned. His misuse of players. His poor man management. His terrible style. His lack of ambition in terms of for what he's got and what he's aiming for. All of these things, for me, as well as the poor results, he should have been sacked ages ago. And if he was at any other top club, I won't mention Real Madrid because they are quite silly in how they sack managers. They sack European Cup winning managers, you know, so we won't mention them. But even Man City, definitely Chelsea, in Europe, in any of the Spanish teams, in Barcelona, he would have been sacked a while ago if he was delivering what he's delivered at United for what he's been given. The freedom of the world, he's been given everything, and he just hasn't delivered. And the pressure, it is caving in on him. Maybe that did add to him getting a bit personal with the Custis guy. I do think Custis, is it Sean or Neil?
It was Neil, I think. Yeah.
I think Neil Custis did, whichever one it was, I think he did write a few articles that were very vehemently saying Van Gaal would be gone within the next week or so over the Christmas period. So maybe Van Gaal had a bit of a grudge against Custis. He should have just done what Ferguson did in the past and banned him for a month. You know, and then he probably wouldn't have got angry about it, because like what Ollie said, it must be hard to keep your cool. So he probably should have just banned him as a precautionary measure.
Okay. In one word, will United make top four?
Yes.
Akin, thanks for coming to the pod this
week. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming back, Ollie. It was a pleasure.
Peace.
Until next week, everybody, take it easy.
Peace.